Hello. Welcome back, everybody. It's been a long time. The last podcast we recorded was a very long time ago, was it?
Like 3 months?
Yeah, something like that.
A while.
So, yeah, we're back. Welcome back. We're going to do a quick Q&A. We'll have topics and interviews for you guys again, but unfortunately for now, this is all we have. So let's get right to it.
Cool. So question number one, how can you teach your super social dog to not be as super social?
Oh, that's a good question.
This is in regards to a very small chocolate lab puppy that we had in our class.
Okay, cool. Do you want to answer that?
Just teaching your dog how to be a little bit more calm around things that make it hyper excited. So in this case, the dog is very obsessed with people. You want to teach the dog that they can only really greet people if they're being polite and calm. So the only way they get what they see as the reward, which is the human affection, is if they have their butt on the ground. So if your dog is used to just going nuts and then jumping up as soon as people come up to them, get them into a sit, the human can proceed toward them, they can pet them, as long as their butt stays on the ground. If the butt comes off the ground, just mark it with like a nope and then have the other person walk away.
Yeah, good. And we should just mention too, this is actually not the worst problem to have.
Oh,
we usually see dogs with many other issues.
This is the best problem to have.
Yeah, a dog that's social, happy to see everybody. It's great, but external excitement will always come at the cost of focus. So if the dog has external excitement towards everything that is not you, when you think about it, every single time the dog is doing that, they're actually not focused at all and they're completely zoning out and heavily engaging on other things. So you will have to balance that out. They're allowed to go say hello to other people and stuff, but you need to immediately be able to regain focus. And if you can, then it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. Next.
Yep. When is a good time to start using a prong or e-collar? This is a very subjective question.
Yeah, we've actually turned a new leaf. We don't use those anymore. No, I'm just kidding. So we think it depends on the dog. Like, we've actually had to, and we don't want to. It's our last resort to putting our e-collar on a young dog, but we've had to put them on dogs pretty young because their habits are so backwards that we need to correct the bad habits over and over and over just so that they can focus and do something basic. So it depends on the dog, depends on the habits. I would say
it depends on your training and your how you kind of bring up the dog as well. What were you going to say?
I would say, for example, if you're having a hard time getting your dog to focus, and let's even say they're a competitive dog, you might actually have to use a prong earlier just to get their attention and intensity towards you. So you'd actually not use the prong to flatten the behavior. You'd use it to increase intensity. And for other dogs, maybe they're so focused on doing other things and so careless on a leash walk that you might need to use a prong at 4.5, 5 months. It depends, but we like to wait a little bit and build a good foundation before putting the tools on. So my answer, and Cass, I think you'll give your answer right after, but my answer is try to build a good foundation. If it seems almost impossible without the help of a tool, then you know it's time to use a tool. And I would say it's regardless of age, but also try not to do it too young.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. In most cases, if your dog is like a pretty standard dog that is relatively confident in most environments, has good food motivation, so it's easy to train in a variety of circumstances. If it's a pretty normal dog, you can, if you make sure your training is pretty good and the dog is understanding everything clearly, you can push back a lot of time before you introduce like a prong or an e-collar. Like, I have a puppy right now who I don't think I'll probably introduce anything for at least a couple more months. He's 6 months now, but he's not an easy dog if he was in a normal home, but he's very easy just with the right training without tools for now. And kind of like Anesh said, I won't ever really have to use a prong or an e-collar on him in terms of needing to stop a lot of bad behaviors. It would more be along the lines of increasing his intensity in certain things. So like, if I recall him and he doesn't come back right away, the correction is more of a, hey, get your butt moving, as opposed to a like, no, don't do that. But then again, we do see a lot of dogs that are not that easy. So those dogs would need these tools a little bit earlier because they probably need a little bit more clarity.
Cool. All right, next.
Best way to deal with resource guarding with toys and other dogs at the park.
Oh, boy.
The age-old, my least favorite question.
I know. I hate this question.
You're asking this question, much.
Honestly,
no offense.
We don't
no
have
offense.
Any issues with you, but why is your dog, let's say if the dog is possessive, why is your dog around dogs that they don't care about with a valuable item? It just makes no sense. It's like a stranger coming up to you, hey, can I play with your Xbox? and you're like, no, screw you, I'm playing pretty hard on my Xbox right now, I don't want to hang out with you, you don't know this person, you don't want to do anything, and you definitely don't want to share your Xbox with a stranger. Same thing goes for a dog and toys. And I think dogs value toys more than the average human values a video game, in my personal opinion. You have anything to add?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think it's like, there are ways to make the dog a little bit more neutral, but what is it at the expense of? Like, what are you, if you have this really awesome dog that loves to play ball, why are you playing ball with it in the dog park in the first place?
Exactly.
Right? So we could easily just, like, let's strap an e-collar on your dog and recall it at the dog park when a dog comes near it with its ball. But, like, what's that at the expense of? You're making ball time less fun for your dog. You're also making dog time less fun for your dog. It's just putting too many things together in one and just making a really bad mix of crap when you could keep all of those things individual and make the dog love each of those pieces individually more.
Yep.
You agree with that?
Yep, 100%.
Cool. Why do dogs lick each other's mouths like that, and why, and is it always a submissive thing, or what is it?
Oh, it's you know, it's you know, when two dogs love each other. Okay, anyway, sorry. Some dogs just greet each other like that.
It's hard to say. Some dogs are very invasive, so they do it out of a place of invasiveness and annoyance to other dogs. My puppy likes to do it more so out of submission, I would say. Like, if he notices another dog is not enjoying him as much as he thinks they should like him, he's like, he basically like begs them to love him by making out with them a little bit.
Yep, he does.
I think Broly showed him that, but but he definitely does that. So I think sometimes it comes from a place of that, but it could be kind of like anything else, kind of like tail wagging. It could be from a variety of different emotions. It's hard to pinpoint exactly without like a full picture of what's going on.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't lead to anything bad after, it's not bad.
Yep. Favorite breeds to work with?
Labs for me. Most of the Malinois we meet nowadays are just garbage. I mean, I hate to say that, but they are.
We're in Toronto.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of dogs bred in Canada, and unfortunately, they're not as super solid as the ones that we see even in the States, but definitely not as solid as the ones that are in Europe. Like, I went to a working dog seminar a few months ago in Switzerland, and all of the dogs could be near other dogs, and they could all be out around humans while working, and I was like, this is kind of unheard of in Canada, because all of the dogs are like kind of sketchy, like dogs that are IGP3s or very highly titled dogs that can't even have humans within 10 feet of them or other dogs around. It's we don't really see like great Malinois here unless they're our own.
Yeah, I agree.
I would say, but a really nice Malinois like my puppy who we're talking a lot about today is really fun to work with. I really enjoy training him. Any dog that has very good food motivation and can fully commit to focus,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta be honest, whenever we have like a group class these days and we have even a few well-bred dogs, like even one out of a class of eight, they're usually pretty okay to work with, and it's usually a lab. Maybe it would be, I find the Goldens nowadays super stressed out.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it would be a lab or some doodles, surprisingly. They've been the most fun in class. So it just depends. As long as the dog has a decent level of motivation, they're fun. The thing is, high motivation, unchanneled, creates a lot of anxiety. So motivation's good as long as it's channeled.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yep.
Right. Next question.
How to keep a dog focused on a walk and not distracted by smells or scents?
Ooh. Yeah, it's probably one of our least favorite things on a leash walk. You would have to first create a standard of what you want on the leash walk by rewarding over and over. So basically, dog pays attention, dog stays within the position, reward. Dog maybe looks at you every few minutes, reward. And the second you've created that, you would start actually correcting for any lack of obedience. So now the position the dog is walking beside you is considered obedience. They start breaking position, they start pulling, they start diving their head. You need to start getting on their crate, on their case. And if they keep doing it and they do it firm, you would have to do a firm correction. And this is how we start a lot of our group classes these days. We see lots of dogs that are obsessive sniffers. We stop the sniffing and then they start freaking out. So you have to mix the reward for position also with corrections for the dog not doing what they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything to add?
That's pretty much it. And if your dog is sniffing, your dog, like, your dog is finding everything more valuable than you, so you have to really increase the value of yourself.
Yeah. If sniffing on a walk sucks. Like, I just...
Yeah.
I don't know why people allow it, and there's so many different... So many people nowadays that are popping up saying, oh, let your dog sniff on a walk, and it's just... We do not ever see it turn into anything good. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I even... If I let my dogs walk, and 99% of the time when I'm walking my own personal dogs, they're never in a heel position. I let them do all kinds of little monkey stuff just because they're just so funny and to watch. But they just don't naturally go to the ground and sniff on their own, even without having to enforce that really strict heel position. And it's just because they just find me way more valuable than smells on the ground, than smelling other dog pee. They'd rather pay attention to me, enjoy the walk with me. They'd rather greet people if people say hi to them, anything like that. So there just needs to be a higher value than whatever smells on the ground.
Perfect. All right, next question.
What type of walking bungee do you recommend for a back injury? 3 surgeries, walking 2 dogs.
Oh, my goodness.
Bungee is not the way to go. First of all,
we're sorry for what happened to you. I don't think a bungee is the way to go. Yes, you do need something that's going to absorb impact if it's bad on your back. But when you think about it, if your dog were to walk properly and if you were to teach your dog to walk properly, there should be zero tension on your leash. Like we always tell people in our classes too, if we were to attach your leash to a scale, a digital scale, and if that scale were to read anything higher than 0.00, you're not walking your dog properly. There should be no tension on that leash, and it should feel like there's nothing there. So I would recommend find a pro to help you teach your dog how to walk properly.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Next
question. What breeder is Donna from? What are her best and worst qualities?
So Donna is from, she's from a mix of 2 breeders. She's from Gypsy's Labs, who imported her from RLR, Red Labrador Retrievers. They actually do send a lot of their dogs to search and rescue homes and the police and all sorts of stuff. So I figured, you know what? I've never really been into labs, and I've met a lot of dogs from this breeder, and the breeder does breed quite a few dogs. Obviously, I was a little bit concerned, but after seeing a lot of the dogs that come from her, the health is good. The intensity is good. It's what I like. The dogs are social and confident. I decided, you know what? Why don't I just take one of these dogs? Because I keep getting offered one. So I got Donna. My least favorite quality about Donna is I don't really have any. Like, there's nothing I don't like about her.
No, she's just a goofball. Like,
yeah, she's a complete goofball. She is... I mean, she's got a lot of energy, I'd say, but she can also turn off whenever I need. She is very funny, loves everything on earth. Her worst quality, we'll try to give you guys one just because, you know, you asked. Her worst, she's not the smartest dog on the planet. She's not that smart.
What about if you let her sleep in your bed? What does she do? Oh,
she does this thing. So when I let her sleep in my bed, which I try not to do as much these days, but every single time I've asked her to, she will... I'll just get up and I'll hear this like gremlin type of walk. Like imagine if you ever see a movie and you see a ghoul or a gremlin walk around and it's really dark and you see their eyes, you know, and they look at you and they go, hey, that's basically what Donna looks like at night because she's scavenging looking for stuff. So I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll just go, hey, what the hell, Donna? And then she looks at me like she's some kind of scurrying little ghoul and she just scurries over and runs back on the bed and goes to bed. It's a pretty shitty trait of hers,
but
it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty funny.
She once,
but it's not bad.
She once overnight broke into a bag of oats and also broke into just my little pantry area, and she ate a beef broth cube, 2 beef broth cubes, and mixed it with oats. I don't know what's wrong with her. Yeah. Yeah.
How was her poop the next day?
Oh, it was nasty.
All right. Next question. How do you prepare for / work through vet visits, specifically those with vaccines? Muzzle conditioning. Yes. If you're concerned about this kind of stuff, then your dog is probably not nice at the vet. So you'll probably need to work on conditioning the dog with the muzzle. Make sure the dog has a lot of good experiences with the muzzle before they get it put on for the first time before going to the vet. Otherwise, they're going to fight you in the future to get that on.
Yep.
If your dog is pretty food motivated, bring a handful of food. Yep. It's actually, I think, been a lot easier for vets recently from what I've heard from going to the vet so much throughout COVID from like my own dogs because I have so many dogs and hearing from clients and stuff like that. It's been easier on vets to treat dogs because their owner is not in the room, but it makes sense because like we see dogs, we've hiking clients that act one way with us, and then they go home and they have a whole different personality behind them. Yeah. It's the same thing with board and train dogs and like all that kind of stuff. So I could see that it would actually be easier in a lot of cases. So if the dog can go into the vet on its own, it might actually be easier for you not to be there. Biggest thing is making sure the dog is comfortable being handled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think people always overcomplicate this. Yeah. At the end of the day, if a vet is good, they yeah. should be able to handle most dogs. Yes, there are some dogs that yeah. no vet can handle. So, and also there's sedation. If you have to do, if you have to give them yep. trazodone, give them trazodone. If they have to wear a muzzle, they should wear a muzzle. And also if they've seen your vet enough times, cool. But if they haven't, yeah, the first time might be a little bit hard, but a relatively skilled vet should be able to deal with a nervous dog. Just mm-hmm. make sure you muzzle condition the dog and teach it that being handled is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Next question. How to teach puppies not to pee anywhere they like. And then it says in brackets, unneutered dog. Unless you have other neutered or unneutered dogs peeing up your house and marking up your house, that is not that relevant.
Just letting you know their testicles don't carry pee. I just need to clarify. So if they're Ew. Neutered. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, man. Okay. Go back to yours.
Okay, sorry. crate training. No Number pee one. Pads, minimal freedom until this is gone. So mm-hmm. basically, dog's in a crate. Dog comes out of the crate, goes to the washroom, and then you play with the dog for a bit. But the dog should be on a leash so you can watch and micromanage everything. The second mm-hmm. you're done, put the dog back in the kennel, which should be no longer than 45 minutes to an hour after you've brought the dog out to go to the washroom. Bring the dog back in the kennel, set your timer for maybe 1 or 2 hours again, and do it again. And then you're going to mm-hmm. do this strict schedule for 30 days until you have pretty much no accidents. Mm-hmm. And then you'd give your dog more freedom and you'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. If your eyes are ever off of your dog, that's why you're having potty accidents. Mm-hmm. If you can't have your eyes on the dog needs to be in the crate. The second that it's out of the crate till the second it goes back in, you have to have your eyes on it. If it looks like it's sniffing your floor or anything like that, like you should be able to see that these are signs that the dog is going to go pee. Or you should just try to just remember that the dog's bladder is like the size of a tea bag. So... you have to take that out pretty frequently. Yeah.
Yep.
And you can give it rewards and all that stuff for going pee outside just so it gets the habit, but that's pretty much it.
Cool.
Next question. When's that third Malinois joining the family?
Yeah, that's not happening for a long time. For me, why don't you guys just ask Cass how her fourth dog is going to come about?
Oh, my fourth? I'm probably going to get another Tervuren. Not a Malinois. I don't want a Malinois. They're so short-haired and short-haired.
Okay, anyways.
I prefer fluffy dogs.
Meanwhile, she has a pit bull beagle mix. Okay, anyways.
I did. Go. Well, that wasn't my choice. That was pushed on me. I do like Ashton, though. I love him. He's so cute. All right. Next. Is there a trainer from Calgary that you would recommend? Wish there were trainers like you. Her. She wrote her.
Well, she probably ran out of characters.
I think so. Wish Calgary. There was someone like you, her.
Oh, good God. Calgary. I don't know. I don't know where Inferno Canine is from, but I would definitely.
They're Calgary.
They are?
Yeah. I don't know if they do pet dog training, but definitely reach out to them.
Ask them. They're very good sport dog trainers. I think they have a great team. I haven't actually met them, but we're going to.
In November.
So I would recommend reaching out to them at least and see if they can send someone to you in the area if they don't do it. Cool. Next question.
Any tips for dogs with seasonal allergies? Make sure your cupboard is stocked with Benadryl.
Yes.
That's pretty much it.
I'm curious as to what kind of dog it is, but I have a feeling it's an American Bully. But anyways, let's move on.
It probably is. Hey, my lab had seasonal allergies.
Oh.
Yeah.
So was it an American Bully? Okay.
He might be. We never did an embark might test be 50-50. On him. I should actually do that on him. Next. How do you get a dog comfortable with a prong collar?
You just put it right on, give them a little bit of food, and easy on the collar for the first little bit. So mm-hmm. if they start doing something you don't like, as long as you've again clearly communicated the standards of what you're expecting, you do need to give them a little correction. But this is better done with a pro. And mm-hmm. the reason we're saying this is because we've had at one point 10 dogs come in that we've had to prong collar condition, and some of them have been really hard. And or like 11 dogs, and we've conditioned 11 dogs, just Cass and I, in under like 20 minutes. And it's hard, it's stressful, it's It can be extremely hard for someone who doesn't know what they're doing, but mm-hmm. every single dog we've noticed that we've worked with in those group sessions, even in that small group of 11, they all react very differently to the collar. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what to do when your dog acts a certain way, do not attempt it. Just ask a pro. Yeah. Anything to add?
Making sure your dog isn't used to just putting its full body weight behind every single collar you put it on. So if your intention is to ever start using a prong collar and you're waiting to start to do it with an obedience trainer or a trainer or whatever, make sure that your dog knows that they can't just yank you to and fro on a leash.
Yeah.
Make sure that, like, you can even start just on your own introducing a little bit of a leash pop, like just with the flat collar. It's not ideal, but it'll definitely give the dog a head start before you introduce it to a trainer, and show it that, like, it puts force towards the collar. Just pull mm-hmm. it back and take it the other way. Like,
and do that's it in all your you house
can
first.
Do to, yeah, that's all you can really do to prep the dog for that. But if you don't prep the dog and it's used to just doing all kinds of pulling, your dog might look like an alley cat when you put the collar on it.
Stray cat.
Yeah.
A stray cat on a catch pole. That's what we call
might
it.
Might look like a raccoon with a brain worm.
Yeah, raccoon with a brain
worm. All kinds of stuff could happen.
A fish on a line. Yeah.
And you don't want the dog to be so stressed out, because it stresses you out, it stresses us out, and it stresses the dog out, which is the worst possible part, because the whole reason you're getting training is for the dog not to be so antsy, for the dog to just chill out and calm down.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And again, just take it from us. Like, I would strongly recommend, we meet so many dogs that have been on a prong and it's mm-hmm. just taught horribly. The dog has no freaking clue what they're doing. I would just recommend go to someone good. They'll teach you how to do it properly. Don't mm-hmm. do it yourself. It's not worth it. Mm-hmm. Yep. Next question.
Someone said, where is Donna?
Donna is in her crate, because if she were out of her crate, all you would hear right now is and potentially you'd
non-stop
hear, yeah, she's just carrying toys and panting and trying to shove a toy into your yep. face. So you would either hear that, or you would hear a toy hit the microphone and then the microphone fall. It would sound like this. That's what it would sound like. Okay, anyways, next question.
And I would be too distracted and we couldn't record the podcast.
Yeah, and then you'd also hear Cass blowing air into Donna's mouth. Yeah,
that makes it sound really weird.
Okay, into her face.
Yeah, okay, good, thank you. All right. What to do if your three-month-old puppy starts barking and growling at everything?
Oh. Yikes.
Find a trainer.
Sounds like an American bully to me. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. Okay, anyways.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, DM me if
no
it
offense
is. DM me if it is.
For the bullies.
Yeah.
DM me if it is.
So, basically, it just means that the dog is very likely, could have been from a good breeder, but just came out as one of the nervous dogs, or maybe just got heavily bullied as a puppy. But very likely it's due to genetics and just bad nerves. So if that's the case, your number one task is going to be building confidence, and you should not try that on your own. You should contact a trainer. So lots of things. Dog has to work for food. Never coddle the dog for being scared or nervous. Expect better of the dog. Push the dog through stress every day. Show the dog new things every day and teach them to adjust at a young age. It is hard. It takes a lot of work. You have to do it literally every day. But if you do it, you can push your dog as absolutely high as they can possibly be, and maybe you can turn them around to being a confident dog. It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and 3 months old is pretty young. Like, it's possible that even if you have, like, a really, really nice, solid dog, your dog could be going through, like, some kind of fear period, and you might just be raising it wrong. Mm-hmm. The advice is always just see a trainer, because there's so many different variables of what could be going on. Your dog could be genetically nervous, and it could be a very scared dog for life. Or it could be a dog who's just not being coddled too properly, or showed what to do properly. Coddled was definitely not the right word there. But catered to properly for its own specific needs. So just contact a trainer and see what they say.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. Next question.
Is there anything you do specifically when raising a puppy to help avoid resource guarding?
Resource guarding is almost always a temperament issue. So if you get a dog that is resource guarding, first of all, the breeder should know. Like, I think every good breeder knows the dog's personality before they give the dog to you. Every good breeder, right? Which also does tell us that not many breeders know what the hell they're doing. So mm-hmm. if your dog is known to resource guard, it's obvious when they start feeding with the other puppies and they start showing these behaviors, you should first start building a life with this dog that is very centered around you. Not many opportunities for the dog to be selfish. Everything comes from you. No high value food or toys that the dog would want to guard. And also, you just want to show the dog that, hey, if I give you something, it's yours. No one's going to bug you, and don't worry about it. And also let them enjoy those things in their crate. But if you raise them a certain way, you could flatten this possessive temperament, and you could probably not see any of this crappy behavior anymore. Mm-hmm. However, if you do the wrong things, which is what everyone does, you can take this possessive temperament, you can make it flourish. And when a possessive temperament flourishes and a dog becomes a real jerk, it's dangerous for everybody involved. Very, very dangerous. Yeah. Anything to add?
Anything specifically that we do when raising a puppy, like I have a puppy right now and he probably couldn't be a resource guarder if I think I didn't raise him properly.
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he is. He is pretty spicy.
I'd say so for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he is. He's not spicy to me, but to you. Some specific things that I do with him to avoid that issue. I always feed him in his crate. I've never fed him besides like hand feeding through training, like to teach him new commands and stuff. The only way that he eats is out of a bowl in his crate. So he never eats out with the other dogs around. He never eats with me walking by. I never stare at him while he eats, which is very hard for me because I think he's so cute when he eats. I don't stick my hands in his bowl. Everyone reads online that that's the thing you're supposed to do. Stick your hand in the bowl, get your hand smell all in the dog's food. And that's supposed to prevent them from resource guarding because it's like you're the dominant and you're giving them the food. But that's the stupidest thing to do. Just leave the dog alone while it's eating. If you don't even put in the dog's mind that you're going to come steal stuff from it, your dog won't be edgy. And then you can also teach your dog a good, like, drop it or leave it or get out of here or anything like that. But at least wait until the dog is a lot older. Or not a lot older, at least wait until they're able to, old enough to really comprehend that. Don't start trying to say leave it when they're 3 months old and then taking their food and stuff away. You only want to use like an out command or a leave it in case of emergencies. So you can teach it independent of them actually eating. Only use it for emergencies. Say they grab a tissue or something like that. You can swap it out for like another treat or something. And then they figure out, okay, if they say leave it, they're not going to come steal stuff from me. They're just going to give me something in return if I drop this item first. And then another big tip is if your dog ever does ever have anything in its mouth, don't try to pry its mouth open to get stuff, because it'll either lead to the dog swallowing stuff or the dog trying to bite you.
Yeah. And also, you will very likely, if you do see a pro for this, if the dog's resource guarding is bad, when it gets a little older, you may need to have an e-collar on the dog in the house for a while to make sure you can correct any behavior where they don't drop something of value. So, and you may have to do that for a while until there's reliability. But this is categorized as definitely see a trainer.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Next question.
Would you ever own a German Shepherd?
Never. Never, ever, ever, ever. Ever, ever.
I would.
It's a nope. Actually, you know what? There's one German like Shepherd really nice. That I really like. His name's Maui.
Oh my gosh.
He's so cute. And he's very funny. I think Cass has a few too.
Yeah, I like the non-super vocal ones. Okay, I found that German Shepherds, they're kind of whiny, but like, I know a whole bunch of them that are like quiet like Malinois and they're really nice. Like Sia.
I just think they're just a little, you know, they just have this, like, German Shepherd smell. A Shrimpy's cute.
Splinter has a German Shepherd smell, so I guess I can't.
I mean,
really.
I like Splinter, though, so. It depends. Depends. Like, if the dog
is
nice and motivated.
And is not from Canada.
No hip issues. Also, just doesn't have the typical Shepherd issues. Like, they move like a tank and destroy everything in their path.
Yeah.
If they're a little bit more athletic, I would consider it. But when they're, like, big tanks and they also just destroy everything and they're barky and loud, then I wouldn't be interested. Yeah.
Von Blitz House has a litter coming soon.
Oh, do they? Yeah,
they do.
Yeah, they also.
I would get one from Michelle.
Okay.
What do you know?
I don't know the dogs that well. I just don't know them. I mean, I like Michelle. I think she's funny.
That's true. okay. Do you recommend any training books?
Yeah, good question. You know what? We've read quite a few books and There are so many books on the, you know, it's written by certified behaviorists and all that stuff. Some of it is interesting. Like Don't Shoot the Dog is a classic, and I think everyone should read it just because it gives you a good foundation on what to teach.
Yeah.
But it really drills in the points of you can't really correct the dog, and which I don't like that. I read this really old book by I think it's an Australian Shepherd agility trainer, I forget what his name is, but it's called Dog Talk. There are a lot of stupid things in that book, but it's really old. A lot of dumb things in that book, but general principles are pretty good. I found a lot of things pretty good. Like he has an idea where your dog should not be in a crate and free in the house, but if they do something bad in the house, you should actually go in and correct them after you've potentially disappeared. It's pretty funny, but good stuff in that book. Everyone always recommends The Good Dog Way, but I mean, I don't really remember what's in there. The introduction is good, but I don't remember the rest of it because there's too much non-technical stuff. When I'm reading a book, I don't like theory that much. I like the technicalities. I like, hey, tell me what to do. Tell me exactly what's necessary. But if you guys like theory, there are lots of books out there.
I actually have the opposite view on that. I think when it comes to dog training books, I think theory is the only thing you can really get out of a book.
Yeah, that's not how I learn. Okay, but go ahead.
But I'm saying you can't really learn hands-on stuff from a book. And dog training is so much hands-on. Theory is kind of the only, in my mind, the only thing you can learn from a book.
Yeah. Yeah. So, book recommendations.
I don't freaking know.
Okay.
I do actually really like Cesar Millan's books. I think they're very interesting. And he doesn't just talk about like, oh, alpha this and like alpha roll and all that. Grab the dog with your bare hands and get bit. He there's a lot of his books that have like interviews with other trainers and stuff too, which is really nice. So he has kind of, in his books, a pretty well-rounded perspective.
Yeah.
Which I really like.
Yeah, and I think they are good. You know, the mass market books that have high reviews are pretty good. For puppy stuff, Zach George's book is pretty good. The other girl, what's her name? Kaylin.
Kaylin
I think is the most ridiculous creature on this planet. But her book is good. It's marketed well, and it's organized very nicely.
Yep.
Okay, next.
Cool. What tips do you have for someone who wants to be a trainer?
You want to tell them what you're doing right now? Hold on. Before we go on to the session.
Okay, so... Cass. I have an inability to sit still and do one thing.
So Cass has a sticky pad.
So I found a screw and a pad of post-it notes, and I screwed the screw with my bare hands into the post-it notes.
No screwdriver, with her bare hands.
We'll post a picture on Canine Expedition Stories.
Yep, good. Okay, next question.
Sorry. All right. What tips do you have for someone who wants to be a trainer?
You would probably have to volunteer your time for a little bit. Mm-hmm. In order to learn stuff. If I can give you tips to be a trainer, it's not all it seems to be. Everyone always tells me these days like that, like, oh, it's great, you get to do what you love, but at the end of the day, doing what you love over and over does not become what you love anymore. There is such a thing as passion burnout. We do like dogs quite a bit. We like working with dogs, but we don't we don't often see the dogs that we want to work with all the time. We see dogs that severely struggle mentally. We see dogs that don't like us. We see dogs that are extremely hard to connect with. And we see dogs that are dirty. And they just poop and pee everywhere and they destroy our place and we have to clean it all the time. So first thing you have to realize is it's not easy. It's pretty hard. It's probably the hardest thing I've ever done. And I've done some pretty hard work. So it's pretty hard. The other thing you'll need to realize is that you do need to get a lot of education, because you'll start training dogs and then you're going to think you're the best there is, and you will be humbled very quickly, and then you'll have to fix your education again, and it's going to take a long, long time, 10 years to get good. The other thing you're going to have to realize is if you don't have the proper help, you may be going a long time but doing things wrong. So get a mentor, work with a lot of dogs, make sure they're very, very different, make sure it's not a bunch of golden retrievers that are all easy. Variance, and also get as much education as you can from as many sources as you can and pick what you like the most.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to add?
I agree with the whole end of what you said. Okay, find a mentor, and then find a variety of people so you can get a couple different perspectives, see what resonates with you the most.
Yes, yep. Exactly.
Cool. How is Donna liking her mallard feathers? You did get her some ducks to retrieve, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is Les Block.
Yes, I forget his dog's name, but he's got a nice dog.
Is it a golden?
It's a lab.
Oh.
Very intense lab. I met him at the hunting trial. Donna is liking them. When we went out, she was carrying them for a while. She's not very good at searching for them yet at 400 yards, but we're working on it. She usually just holds them and carries them for like an hour. But yeah, she likes them a lot. Likes them a lot. Next question.
Cool. I don't have to answer that. Another resource guarding question?
Any tips on resource guarding with a bite history?
Similar to the last stuff.
Yeah, very similar. Resource guarding with a bite history. I mean, if the dog has bit during resource guarding before, Don't try it. Don't try it on your own. Remember, we would classify that on the same level as you. Let's say you can fix basic things in your car, but your car's engine blows up. Are you going to try to fix that on your own, or are you going to call a mechanic? You're probably going to call a mechanic. I would classify this on the engine has blown up category. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Next.
Yep. This is an interesting question.
Uh-oh. Cass always answers the interesting ones.
How acceptable is it for a dog to have had bites to dogs / humans? When do we get help? The second the dog puts teeth on a single other creature.
Do you want to answer this?
It's not acceptable.
Honestly, I would probably wait for maybe 15 more bites, and then I think you're good. Yeah, 15 to 20. Yeah.
Just if the dog has ever bit a human or a dog, get help.
Yeah, get help.
You clearly don't know what you're
doing.
I'm
kidding, by the way, guys. Like, people are going to start calling us. Oh my God, you guys said wait until 20 bites.
I know.
I'm serious, though. But the day you even notice your dog lunge at someone to nip at them and doesn't cause damage but wanted to, call for help that day. Call as many trainers as you can and see who can help you and see who's good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not something you want to screw around with.
Yeah. Fighting another dog, call for help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Next. How can I teach my dog to howl at a fire truck siren?
I've been trying to figure that out myself. That's very easy. Okay, first you have to go to www.foxfirebeagles.com. That's the first thing you have to
do.
And then you got to get one of those. You got to wait 2 years at least. And then when you get one of those, then all you do is you wait for a fire truck to come by. And then what?
I have a beagle and he doesn't do that.
Okay, we'll let Cass answer this question then. Go ahead.
Mine doesn't do that. I'm waiting to the answer. I also don't know. I would like if Ashton did that. It'd be fun.
Okay, so here's what you need to do. You need to go on YouTube, play fire truck sounds. And if they know a speak command, you would say speak and then play the fire truck sound. Or, sorry, in the opposite order, play the fire truck sound and then speak. And then when the dog speaks, you'd mark and reward. Then you'd wait. Mm-hmm. You'd let the fire truck sound play again. And then you'd mark or click and reward again. You would do this until your dog starts barking the second they hear the fire truck sound and not you telling them to speak. And then you would start barking and rewarding for that. Then you're gonna just start hunting for houses that are on fire. And then when you find them, you're gonna wait, and you're gonna wait for a fire truck to appear, and then your dog will do the job. Anything to add? That's not bad, right?
That sounds good.
Yeah, okay, good.
Cool. All right. Thoughts on training small dogs. We have very opposite perspectives on this.
Yeah, I'll let Cass answer this one.
I love training small dogs.
Yeah,
especially very happy, motivated small dogs. Yeah, actually, even nervous small dogs. I'm like, oh, you're so cute. I feel so bad.
I've got a similar answer. I love watching Cass train small dogs.
Yeah, okay. Okay,
next question.
Okay. Can I apprentice with you?
Who's this? This is Hannah and Ohana. I mean, when we have an opening, which is... I don't know, we were supposed to have one in June and we didn't. So I don't know, whenever we do. So, we're just doing renovations, so maybe when the renovations are done.
Yeah, we'll maybe post or something one day when we have time available for that again. Mm-hmm. Not anytime super soon, but hopefully in the next 2 years at least future.
Yeah, I'd say so.
How do I get my dog to stop biting everything?
How do you get your dog to stop biting everything? Now, we would have to define everything. What is everything? Is it your
probably
couch?
Stuff in the leash. I mean, what?
Is it the couch?
Probably stuff in the house, yeah.
Stuff in the house. Yeah, crate the dog. If the dog starts biting the leash, you're going to have to start correcting them pretty soon. So they bite the leash, no leash pop. They bite the couch, no leash pop. And when they're unsupervised, they should not have the opportunity to bite anything.
Yeah, you also need to give your dog some kind of outlet because clearly your dog is obsessed with chewing. So.
Yep.
Your dog just needs somewhere to put all of its energy, whether it's a dog that actually really needs to chew stuff and wants to chew stuff all the time, put it on a leash and give it a Benabone and put it on a bed
or
give it a frozen turkey neck.
Give it the 2022 Canine Academy chew toy, Indestructible.
You
heard of that one?
To be honest, no.
Okay, so give it the 2022 Canine Academy chew toy. Coming soon. Okay, next.
Well, I had one more thing to say. I can't remember.
Oh, damn.
I guess
sorry.
We're
That's
next onto the... Okay.
That's
okay.
My fault.
Oh, otherwise, just go play fetch with your dog or something like that. Let them run around and play. They have too much energy or something. Next. Top three breeds that have selective hearing. Okay, ready? Beagle, Husky.
Borzoi.
What?
Yeah. Beagle, Husky, Borzoi. Beagle, Husky, and...
You don't want to say like Shiba Inu or something?
Shiba Inu, yes, yes, Shiba Inu.
That's it. That's the trifecta, that as they one. Call yeah. it. All right.
AKA the Young and Shepherd. Okay, anyways, let's go. Next one. Sorry. Okay, next.
Anyone who's not from Toronto won't get that. And they'll be like, the what? How to help car anxiety. Even in a mandatory down, still heavy whining, panting on turns.
Yikes, who or asked slow. This question?
Oh, the dog is, it's, Kyberian.
Oh, I've talked to Kyberian a couple times. You may be correcting the dog a little low and amping the dog up. If the dog knows to down in the crate and they're still whining, yeah, I would imagine maybe you haven't gone on enough drives, or maybe on every single drive it sounds like you are driving the dog upwards with a low agitating corrections. So I would probably correct pretty firm because the dog's been babied for a little too long. Were you going to add something?
No, that was good. Yeah, like I have a group of dogs that I go hiking with once a week, and there's one dog in the group who, as soon as I turn down a street where I'm going slow, newsflash, this is my own dog. as soon as we start slowing down, he knows that we're coming up to a trail, and he starts going, hey, and he starts just kind of singing a little bit. It's really strange and weird.
So annoying.
He's so creepy. But yeah, basically just with the e-collar, use a pretty high correction.
Can you imitate the sound he made when he sniffed Mia yesterday? So he's a very horny dog, and he sniffed this female intact Doberman yesterday, and then he started sitting on his chair and whining. Do you know the sound he made?
What, this one?
Yeah.
That's the one?
Yeah, and his wiener was out very
red. It was
red.
So gross.
It was big and red.
He's so vocal. It sounds like your dog is pretty vocal too. You'll just have to, they're already in a down, say no nice and loud. The second they make noise after that, you'll have to correct them relatively high.
Yeah, the other issue what's going on. That may be happening is every time the dog gets in the car, it's probably going somewhere exciting or somewhere that causes anxiety. I would just start bringing your dog with you everywhere for maybe even 2 weeks. Just, hey, I'm going to the coffee shop, but you're going to wait in the car as I get a coffee. So there's nothing fun happening today. And then we're going to go back home. And you're going to show your dog that sometimes we're going to go for a drive and it's not going to be exciting. And it is what it is. Yeah. And that might help because your dog may be anticipating and going crazy. Cool. Next.
What's the best way to build a bond with a dog who is not interested in food?
That is just a bad idea. You can offer affection, but the dog is overfed. Sounds like the dog is very overfed.
Well, it's probably like a super nervous street dog thing.
Yeah, I mean,
you'll have to spend a lot of time with it.
Yeah, you might have to get a lab, honestly.
Oh my god,
that's so I'm just kidding.
A lab you'll have an instant bond with anyway.
Yeah.
Like, Donna would walk away with anybody.
I know. So what you'll have to do is try building extra food motivation in the house, and if the dog's not eating in the house, which is an area of comfort with excitement, then I would definitely say they're overfed, right?
Yeah, but you also have to, like, just hang out with the dog a lot. Like, have it on a leash, have it sit next to you. For hours.
Do they not know this dog well? Isn't it their dog?
I don't know, man. 120 characters. That's all they can really do.
Okay, so then,
I think. I don't know. That's a rough
So then
estimate.
Let's do two variables. Variable one, it's your dog, and you've had the dog for a while, and it's not eating with you. Food motivation is too low.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If it's a new dog and you're trying to build a bond
if
with
you
it.
Yeah, like a new street dog, and you've had it for, like, what, 6 days, and it's not taking food from you.
Yeah, just hang out with the dog a lot and keep offering food. And do that for many hours a day, and don't put too much pressure on the dog, so don't do too much affection. Just keep offering food, dropping it on the ground.
Yeah, you just have to kind of find out what the dog enjoys from the relationship with you. That's pretty much it. Like, we have a dog here right now, her name's Atlas, and I've fed her every single day twice a day since she's been here. She's been here, what, 2 or 3 weeks, and like, that doesn't help open her up at all. Has good food motivation, did not help open her up for a relationship at all. What worked with her was just going on a walk.
Yeah.
Now we're best friends. Now
going on a walk, hanging out with her outside.
Yeah, and letting her, I don't know, letting her push me around a little bit. If you have a super nervous dog, you do have to give them a little bit, it has to be a bit of a push and pull relationship. The dog has to have make some moves towards you that they kind of want to interact, and then you have to know how much to give back and interact. In the first little while, like, Atlas, I took her on a walk, she was like, she was staring at me with her eyes wide open. She was like, who the hell are you? Why are we out here? Where am I? And then, like, I just hung out with her on the street corner for a little while. I brought her back to a quiet area, And then I kicked a stick around on the ground and just discovered she really likes to play tug with a stick.
Yeah.
And that's just what helped open her up. She didn't care about taking food from my hand for a while. She's like, she's taking the food and she's learning the commands, but she's like, I don't really care about you. So relationship-wise, that was developed with her through play. So you'll just have to figure out what works.
Yeah, next question.
People are going to hear that.
I'm just eating a little cookie. And then she's
trying to take a snack of a cookie.
Okay, next.
Next question. From my mom. Are you ready?
Uh-oh.
Is that doggy daycare? My mom has no clue what happens here.
So during this during this Q&A post, I think we had a photo up of Cass and like 14 dogs or something.
Yeah.
So Cass's mom is asking if this is doggy daycare.
I swear she knows that this is not a doggy daycare
facility. I think you're going to have to answer that, Cass.
Adele, this is not doggy daycare.
Yeah, and Adele, we like the logo top right.
I like the bottom right.
Okay.
My mom's looking for a new logo for her business.
Next question.
All right. How to fix unnecessary whining with or without an e-collar?
How to fix unnecessary whining with or without an e-collar? It sounds like if the dog is whining a lot, they're probably, if they are an intense dog, you're probably not doing enough with the dog. Mm-hmm. If you are doing enough with the dog and playing with the dog, like, it's, I to anxious. This day have not heard my dogs whine. I don't think I've ever heard them whine in my whole life.
Well, I only hear Ashton whine when he's horny.
Yeah. Yeah. So usually whenever people tell us like their dogs have anxiety, it's a lot of the time, unless the dog is severely genetically anxious, a lot of the time it's fabricated, created by the humans, the human's pet whining. The humans coddle the dog too much, so I would recommend have the dog do one thing a little bit away from you, maybe like 10 feet away from you, and tell the dog to lay down. And if the dog keeps getting up from their down, you'd have to start correcting them, especially if they know how to lay down and chill. And if they keep breaking it and getting up, you would have to give them a pretty firm correction. But slowly do this process over the course of 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah.
Cool. What would you say is the best way to build a dog's confidence?
Best way to build a dog's confidence. This depends on the dog. If the dog likes play, mm-hmm. I would always say play in new environments and play and let the dog win. Play and give the dog a nice fight for playing, and also try to make sure the dog is willing to like do new things. If the dog's doing the same thing over and over, they're not learning and not building confidence. So I think the real answer to this question is learning new things, doing new things in new environments, and pushing harder every time they do something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just repeated exposure over and over.
Yeah.
Especially if it's environmental stuff or like specific things like bikes. If your dog is super, super nervous, they'll just have to see things so many times.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And don't get too caught up on the, I hear this all the time, and it's honestly at this point a little annoying. People always tell us, oh yeah, I make my dog go up and stand on a bench or go over like a sewer grate. And usually we go, okay, so you use leash pressure and pulled the dog up on a bench, or you use leash pressure and made the dog go through a sewage grate. And at the end of the day, it's a freaking sewage grate and a chair. It's not that big a deal, and the dog's mm-hmm. not going to learn anything by repeatedly climbing on things. So I wouldn't focus too much on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, next.
All dogs are different, but what are super common things / environments that make dogs nervous? I would say those grates you were talking about.
Yep.
Common things that make dogs nervous. Bikes. Bikes freak a lot of dogs out. Shopping carts.
Yeah.
Strollers. Babies.
Common things. I mean, I don't know. Loud noises. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much it. How do you make sure you're not overcorrecting your puppy / dog?
Who asked this?
Ponko.
I don't know. Do you want to answer that?
If you think that you're overcorrecting your dog, you probably are overcorrecting your dog, because you're like overcorrecting in the sense of correcting too frequently, not correcting firmly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Also, your dog might be a little confused. If you find that you are correcting them reasonably and there's still no change in behavior, the dog is probably a little bit confused.
Mm-hmm.
Also, your dog is made of titanium, so I don't really know. Your dog is ultra, ultra strong.
I think for that specific dog, the dog just needs to be off leash and have a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
So that they give you less conflict during training.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What was I going to say? I was going to say something else, but I totally lost it.
Not overcorrect your puppy and dog.
All right, next question.
Yep. Best reading materials for a high drive dog that lacks confidence.
I don't know.
I
don't think there's any reading material that's
That's experience that, yeah. related. And high drive dog lacking confidence, you would have to see a trainer, because that can quickly become nerves. It can become aggression. So see help for that.
Mm-hmm. How to get your dog to stop being so obsessed with squirrels?
You would have to do a lot of prey drive work. Get the dog to be in control under prey drive. Get the dog to think better. And you would have to do lots of exposure around squirrels. Almost flood the dog with squirrels.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Opinion on adding grains to a raw diet, or is the opinion that I should speak to my vet?
You can ask. You can
the opinion that. Is that you should just talk to the vet, because we're not vets.
Sure. You don't have anything to add?
Not really. I don't really feed raw anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you can. I think it's better.
It depends on the dog. I think it's
veggies
just,
at least.
Yeah. I know that when I was feeding Wolfie raw, Wolfie just, like, lives for grains. So, like, she's so much happier. And I think overall she's healthier on a kibble diet mixed mm-hmm. in with cooked food. But I don't know. Really depends on the dog. I would imagine that, seeing as dogs are, like, domesticated animals and they're not wild wolves anymore, and they're not just eating like meat, like, even if you look at dogs in the street, they don't really have a diet that's even 50% meat. I would say they're eating a lot of grain in the first place, so like a domesticated dog, I think it's just more in their biology to be eating more grain. But I don't freaking know, because I'm not a vet, so don't hold me to that answer. Cool.
Are you skipping a lot of questions, or
here and there, some of them are a little weird. Benefits of using another language for training.
Okay, so benefits are they actually have different meanings. So mm-hmm. if you ever see people use different languages for training, that a down versus like a Platz in German would to the dog have a different meaning. So a down would be a non-formal down, which means the dog would just lay down calm. And then a Platz would be like, the dog will realize, oh, every time I hear this, it's for work. It's in drive. So the dog will be in a different state of mind doing it, and probably do it sharper and more intense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about Platz in Dutch?
So a funny story, we have these Dutch clients, and I don't know how I was told to say heel and down. But I used to say heel volgen, and there are a lot of people in...
That's Dutch. That's Dutch, by the way.
That's Dutch, volgen. And there are lots of people in the PSA industry or PSA community that say volgen. And it's butchering the actual Dutch pronunciation. So when the clients came here for a session and I had my dog with me and I said volgen, these guys started freaking elbowing each other and laughing. They're like, oh, did you hear that?
They were cackling.
They're like, he said
volgen.
And then we also know someone who says, can you say it?
She says liggen.
She says liggen to tell her dog to down. But the actual pronunciations, and Cass can pronounce them better than me. Go ahead.
It just requires a lot of phlegm. I got to step back.
Because Cass is, if you guys didn't know, Cass is 22% Dutch.
No. Like 50.
I'm just kidding. Okay, go ahead.
You say fulhan. That's volgen. Yeah. And then down is liggen.
Yep. So you can only imagine how much you would laugh when he heard liggen. Yeah, okay. Next question.
Okay. How many dogs do you look after?
Do we look after? We have usually like 8 dogs here at a time, which is absolutely exhausting. We could take on more. Sometimes there are some months in summer we would have no less than 16 dogs here. Between mm-hmm. the two of us, it's pretty hard. But it's usually if we have more than usual, it means the dogs here are pretty nice. If we have less, the dogs need more care and attendance. So 8 to 16. During Christmas, sometimes we have 20 plus, but mm-hmm. We just take what's manageable.
Aaron said, how are you doing? How sweet is that?
Oh, Aaron Bruno?
Aaron Bruno.
Wow, yeah, very nice question. We are doing great. I got to say, I was a little upset when you didn't show up to puppy class, but besides that, we're good.
We're good. We miss you guys and Tessa.
Yep.
How can I stop my dog from being an attention whore?
Who asked this question?
Sam.
Sam has the laziest border collie on the planet. you would have to stop giving the dog affection when they are begging for attention. I think there's nothing else we can really say.
Yeah. I think you just have to go tell him to do something else. Because, like, if you're cuddling with him on the couch or something, obviously he's going to want to be there for that affection. But if he's, like, annoying you and you're trying to get work done at home, you might have to just, like, work on his place command and just get him to go lie down and chill out while you're busy.
Mm-hmm. Good, good.
What's the biggest mistake you've made as dog owners?
As dog owners? Oh, mm-hmm. So many.
I know.
So many. And I think even with Cass's puppy right now, she's doing things perfectly against the mistakes she made with her other dog and against all the mistakes I've made with my dogs. And I think it's great that she's learned from those mistakes. And also, we have great help. Someone who's made mm-hmm. a lot of mistakes with different dogs and knows how to raise a dog perfectly.
Yeah.
So I think she's doing a great job with her current dog. So no real mistakes. Besides, I think he's just a little lazy, so he needs more restraining.
Yeah.
With my dogs, a lot. I was originally told, and it's to no fault of anybody, but I was originally told that my dogs were going to turn out differently than I expected. So I was a little too easy on both of them. I should have done a lot more frustration, a lot more building, a lot more obedience. You'll hear this age-old tale nowadays in the sport world where they say, oh, just let your dog be a dog for the first few months. It's actually the stupidest freaking thing you can do, because the dog will not be engaged. They actually have less intensity because you can harness intensity through focus. It's freaking stupid. Don't ever listen to that advice ever. So what I do wish I did was more obedience with a restraint, more obedience with lots of frustration in it, getting the dogs built up a lot younger, putting much more pressure on the dogs. And honestly, I actually do wish I corrected the dogs a little firmer for lack of intensity when they were younger. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You? Anything?
I think when I first got Wolfie, I messed up a lot of stuff because Wolfie was like a hyper nervous dog. We don't even really see that many dogs that come in here that are as nervous as when I met Wolfie. I did a lot of on-leash introductions with other dogs because I knew she was so anti-dog that I thought it would help. I put her in doggy daycare where I worked, thinking it would work. But it just made her worse and worse and worse. Luckily, I figured that out pretty quickly into owning her, probably within like 6 months or so. And now she's fantastic. She's
sleeping beside another dog right now.
She's sleeping on top of another dog right now. She has tons of fun going on hikes with other dogs. She has tons of fun. We have her out for potties sometimes with the other dogs. Yep. She loves being around other dogs. She definitely thinks she's the queen of all the dogs, but she's not going into the situation being nervous or wanting to fight anyone. She's way more social with people. She, even when we have really, really bad reactivity sessions, she loves being out here for those because she loves to see that there's a dangerous dog here, but I know it's never going to get to me. So I think it actually builds a little bit of confidence in her just being in situations like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's I think the biggest mistake I made. I don't think I made any mistakes with Ashton. I just know that he's just a brat.
No matter if you raise him perfectly and badly.
I think I'm raising him really well.
Yeah, I think if you raise him perfectly, this is probably the best he'll ever be.
I think anything I do with him, I wouldn't consider it a mistake. I'd be like, this is leeway in spite of how he is.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if I let him sleep on my bed, there's really no repercussion of that. Like I don't find that he guards or anything after I let him sleep on my bed or he wants to fight anybody or anything like that. But I let him do it. I know it's probably not helping anything, but he's easily manageable for me with my knowledge and skill set.
Yep.
I think there could be a lot of mistakes made with Ashton, but I don't think I'm making any.
Cool.
With okay, Wolfie, next. Certainly. Best way to help a dog from too excited to neutral around dogs. AKA avoidance or more interaction until it's not so new and exciting.
Whoa, who asked this question?
Melbud,
okay, so if it's specific to her dog, she has a Mal. This is a long question. So if the dog's too excited around dogs, you'd have to teach the dog to greet a dog in a calmer state of mind. If you noticed that one TikTok video I put up of Broly, he was trying his absolute best to be calm around that puppy. And everyone thought he was stressed. All the morons thought he was stressed. So the dog's just trying their best to present themselves in a soft way so that the other dog can engage with at least a little bit of confidence. So you may have to teach your dog to lay down or just have a soft presentation to the dog. The other thing you might want to do is the second that your dog starts getting out of line, you would say no, and you'd have to give the dog a bit of a correction, but ideally on a long line and a flat, as opposed to an e-collar, because that could piss your dog off. So you would do that, and then you would let your dog re-engage when they calm down a little bit, and you let your dog, the other dog, do a bit more of the engaging. Anything to add?
No, that's pretty much it. Just like Broly. How to stop my puppy from biting only me. It's one of those single person
biters. Start putting bite suits on everybody you see so they start biting everyone, not just you.
What kind of advice is that?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
You're probably just... Okay, one thing, I don't think we often say this to people, but sometimes when people come in and they say that their dog is only biting them, the person is usually so freaking dramatic when the dog bites them that the puppy's like, yo, this is a squeaky toy and a person.
Yeah, usually when people say that, they're super flinchy with their hands when they pet the dog.
Yeah.
Super flinchy, and the dog starts seeing your hand as like a freaking flinchy toy.
Flinchy's one thing, but screaming when the dog touches
you. And the second the dog touches you, you become the most fun thing on the universe. You go, and you start running around looking like a turkey. That's what you look like.
Oh my god. That's usually it. You also just, you might not be just establishing enough boundaries for the dog. Everyone in the household might not be actually telling the puppy to stop it when they bite them.
Yep.
And you are not. So the puppy probably thinks that they can just get away with it with you. You kind of have to be on their case. Or get someone to help you show the puppy that it's not allowed to bite you too.
Exactly.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
How to encourage tug/other toy play outside. Dog just wants to sit and look around or chase me.
They didn't say sniff. Tug or other play. Sorry, the dog wants to chase them?
Chase the owner. That's fun. That should be pretty easy.
That's fine. You might have to get a slightly more valuable toy. Maybe like a sheepskin toy. So try a flirt pull first, and then you can try a nice little sheepskin tug, and you can have the dog really, really chase, but you may not be exciting enough. That could be happening, but if the dog is chasing you, then something's there. It's just not towards the toy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, next.
The dog is interested in you, which is good. This sounds like puppy behavior. Sit and look around or chase the human.
Yeah.
That sounds like a baby. Keeping up with Winston.
Okay.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, she won one of the Roughlands.
Oh, she did. Yeah, congratulations, Winston.
They do rally obedience.
Oh, exciting. Yeah. Okay, so the dog's not a puppy.
Yeah. Okay, next.
Ask each of your dogs to review their two other siblings.
Oh, okay. You go first.
Me go first?
Okay. Yep.
I think Wolfie would say her brothers are very annoying.
Yep.
And stinky. She doesn't want to be around them. She loves them, but she doesn't want them in her personal space. Ashton would say, I love my sister and my little brother is annoying.
Oh no, she needs to give him a rating.
Oh, they have to rate?
Out of them, out of 10, yeah.
This says review. Oh, you're adding to it?
Review has a rating.
I think Wolfie would rate Splinter,
yep,
which is my new puppy.
Probably 5 out of 10.
In case anyone doesn't know.
5 out of 10.
I don't know about 5 out of 10. I'd say 3.5 to 4. she likes him and she'll play with him, but the second she's done playing, she's like, no, we're done. She gets pretty annoyed.
And what, does he keep going?
No, he's very respectful of her.
Okay,
he's good. He's so confused. He's like, what the hell? I thought we were playing, but okay. So she gives him a 3.5. She gives Ashton maybe, I'd say, a 7.
Mm, okay.
Because she really likes playing with Ashton, and she likes him, and she knows that she can kind of bully him around a little bit. I think that's it.
Okay.
She does really love Ashton.
That's good.
And he never annoys her. He can always read her really well. So I think she likes... I think she likes him because he can read her.
Okay.
Ashton would give Wolfie a 10 out of 10 because he absolutely loves her and he would never harm her.
No, he would do 8 out of 10 because she's a spade.
No, but he loves her like his sister.
If she were not spayed, she'd be a 10.
There's no incest in this house.
But Ashton...
No, but he would never hurt her. He would never fight her.
Okay, 10 out of 10.
I think Ashton has it in him biologically to fight literally any creature on earth, including the human that feeds him.
Yep.
If you don't know what you're doing, he's not that easy. Like, I know online he looks all cute and funny, stealing that little hash brown here and there, but he's actually not a nice dog.
Yeah, bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
So 10 out of 10.
But he gives Wolfie a 10 out of 10 because
what would he give Splint?
He loves Wolfie so much.
He does a lot.
He would give Splinter
probably a 3 out of 10.
Probably a 1 out of 10.
Yep.
He sometimes likes Splinter, and then he's like, this dog's big now, and he can actually beat me up when we're playing. He liked playing with Splinter until Splinter got so big, and now he's like, it's another intact male in the house, and...
And Splinter's, like, pretty mean. He'll see Ashton.
He's nice to Ashton, though.
I know, but he'll see Ashton howl, and then he'll body slam him. Like, shut up, brother.
But he thinks he's playing, like, with all of his other dog friends. They're like, oh, this is fun. Ha ha, good joke. And then Ashton's just like, F off. Okay,
what would Splinter rate them?
Splinter would rate them each 10 out of 10. He loves them both so much.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so my dogs, we'll start with Broly. So Broly gives everything in life 10 out of 10 anyway. Yep. Broly looks at Scooter, worships him. Scooter's the best thing on earth besides my dad. And so he'd probably give Scooter 9.5 out of 10.
9.5?
Actually, no, probably like 11.
What would he give Splint?
Probably 11 out of 10, actually. Splint, 11 out of 10. So Broly loves Scooter to death. Like, literally, I worry for the day if Scooter dies before Broly, because I think Broly would...
Probably die
of a broken heart, because he'd be so sad.
Poor Broly.
So yeah, he gives Scooter, I'd say 9.5 out of 10. He would give Donna like a 8.5 out of 10, because he loves Donna and he absolutely wants to cuddle her all the time. But every time Broly picks up a toy, Donna goes and steals it. Even if Donna has a toy in her mouth, she'll drop her toy and go steal Broly. So, and Broly looks very sad when it's done. So yeah, probably like an 8 out of 10, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Maybe even 7.5.
No. Okay, Scooter.
Scooter would probably give Broly a 8 out of 10, because he does love Broly to death and wants to play with him all the time, but
he's not codependent like Broly.
but he's also like, hey, little brother, you're a little bit annoying. I love you to death and I'll play with you and I'll never fight you, but I also maybe just would rather do my own thing for a little bit. So I think you'd also give Donna like a 7.5 out of 10, because Scooter will go try his hardest to go grab a Jolly Ball, and then Donna will just steal it from him and run away, and then Scooter looks around and he just goes, oh, this is kind of shitty. And then I'll go get another toy, and Scooter's super excited, and I'll throw it, and then Donna will drop her Jolly Ball and then go chase him down and steal his Frisbee, and Scooter will just go, okay, this is a shitty day.
Yeah.
But he loves when we're on a big field, because Donna can't catch him, and he'll just run and he'll outrun her over and over and over, so it's hopeless for her. Donna would probably give Broly 10 out of 10, I would say. Because, you know, she beats him up. He's into it. Loves him. So she's really into that. She steals toys from him. It's a great relationship for her. I think she would give Scooter a 9 out of 10, because she loves playing with him and loves wrestling. But every time she tries to bite his foot, he moves his foot out of the way and she gets a little
bit sad.
And she's like, damn, there are no pain points to grab. So 9 out of 10 for Scooter.
Oh, good. My dog is obsessed with the ball. It's all she wants to do, and she'll hog them. Do I ground her from the ball?
I'm dead. Ground. She said ground.
That's a good one.
Yeah, ground her and also take away her supper. I'm just kidding. Okay. Sorry, I'll let Cass answer this.
Oh, my God. It's a German Shepherd, so it's good that the dog is obsessed with the ball. If you're talking about a situation where there are multiple balls out and multiple dogs, you'll have to just really use kind of a bit of correction to keep her focused on her own toy.
Yep.
That's pretty much it.
Yep.
Definitely do not ground her from the ball, because you'll turn her into a complete psycho.
She'll get way more frustrated.
Yeah.
Yep.
You'll turn her very, very crazy for the ball. I don't know, maybe try buying like 80 balls and just dump them into your backyard and leave her out there for 6 hours. See what she thinks of balls then. She'll be like, well, this shit is boring.
Yeah. Next.
Who knows? That'd be a good test.
Who's this?
Katie Jens.
Oh, Caitlin Jens. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Elsie's a great dog. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Next.
Why is Donna so cute?
I don't know. It's because her eyes are a little too high on her head.
They are. They're in her forehead.
Yeah, that's why she's cute.
They're almost at her... If dogs had a hairline, they're almost at her hairline.
Yep. That's what makes her very cute. And she's little.
Wow, she's so cute.
And she's so happy. Yeah.
She's so cute.
Next.
My 7-month-old puppy is still mouthing a lot. What's the best way to have her stop? So at this point, it's no longer teething. Your dog is just biting you.
It's
no longer
a 7-month-old puppy. It is a 5 months away from a 1-year-old monster. That's what it is. So
yeah.
You would have to correct that pretty firm. You might even have to have a prong collar on in the house with a long line and give the dog a correction every time it's putting its teeth on humans.
Yeah.
What can you seek help. Seek help for that.
Yeah.
Next.
What can you do about submissive peeing?
Oh, boy. There is a very simple concept to fixing this as quick as possible, but it is extremely hard to do. It's the easiest thing on earth in theory, but super hard to do. Mm-hmm. You need to act like you don't have a dog, you have a ghost in the house, and you just don't go near it. You walk in, dog's in the crate, excited to see you. You just run to that crate, open the crate, and just walk away and be like, I don't have a dog here. I don't know. I don't even know why I opened the crate. I just let the crate open, and then the dog's running around. And then the dog runs out, realizes you're not really that exciting right now because now they can't hit their excited threshold to pee. And also you can't reach down to pet it because of the dog's submissive pees. You're not by putting your hand over their head, they can reach a submissive state of mind, and boom, now you have submissive pee. So there's only one option. You have to act like you don't have a dog. You take the dog out of the crate, you walk, you throw a leash on the dog super quickly, like a slip lead, throw it on the dog, run it outside, wait for it to pee and poop, and then you'd go back in and you'd do minimal excitement for like probably 60 days. It's pretty hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything to add?
No, that's pretty much it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are we done?
Someone said, will you be making any more podcast episodes?
I don't think so. We're probably
doing that right now.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, you know, like, sorry we took a break, but we'll try our best to be consistent. It's pretty hard to squeeze this in despite everything else.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We just have a few more questions.
Okay.
Is it normal for senior dogs to growl / nip at puppy / young dogs, even after 2 years? It's completely normal, and it's usually not the fault of the older dog. It's usually the puppy is being a little too crazy and unruly, and no one is stopping it, and no one is seeing that the older dog is uncomfortable and wants to get out of the situation.
Yep.
That's usually the biggest problem.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a senior dog, you should assume that they're going to be annoyed that you have a puppy. You should assume that. Why not? But that doesn't mean that they're allowed to bite and nip at the dog. So what you're going to have to do is first make sure you create enough space between them so that the puppy is not bothering the adult dog as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
You would have the dogs around each other, and you'd wait for the senior dog to do the interactions as opposed to the puppy. You would let that happen more and more, and you make sure when the puppy starts getting a little too rambunctious, you pull the puppy away with a long line or a leash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Tips for building play drive.
Oof. We're gonna make a video series on this pretty soon. It's gonna be great. We're super excited about it. Next year, we just have a lot of things on the go.
Soon next year.
Oh, is that what I said?
Yeah.
Oops. There's a lot to do. You have to mix restraint. You have to mix frustration. You have to teach the dog that they have to get an excited state of mind. You have to then build drive for the specific toy you have. You need to make sure it's the right toy. A lot of things you have to do. Depends on the type of dog. If you have a Mal, it's pretty easy. If you have a nervous dog, it can be pretty hard. You have anything to add?
Nope. That's cool. Pretty much it. Cool.
Oh, so we're done.
We're all done.
Wow. All right, guys. So thanks for joining us. We are going to do our best, again, to pop these out as much as possible.
Yep.
We always like answering your questions, and thank you again for sending us your questions. All right, guys, take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.